It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The new exhibit, Toys of the 50s, 60s, and 70s at the Heinz History Center, takes a serious look at a fun subject. Curators Emily Ruby and Ann Mataraz spoke with Essential Pittsburgh producer Marcus Charleston.
Toys of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Now, for some of you, this may not sound like a typical fair at the History Center. It's a fun exhibit, there's no question about it. And it seems
Emily Ruby, curator.
What was your goal in putting together this exhibit?
Well, it was a traveling exhibit that came from the Minnesota Historical Society. So our goal was to add that Pittsburgh element to it, which we did through adding information about the Wolverine Toy Company and how it really fit in with the themes of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And then, of course, to add this arcade at the end to really bring the exhibit into the 80s and talk about the future of toys. And that was a great partnership with Replay Foundation, which is a local nonprofit that has the most pinball machines of any organization in the world that we know of, at least.
How did you give it a Pittsburgh spin?
The Pittsburgh spin was talking about both local, I mean, we all connect to toys, right? So toys is one of those stories that each of us can connect with, whether we're from Pittsburgh or Minnesota, but really bringing in some of those local companies and organizations.
What has gotten the most reaction so far?
We like to call it the I had that exhibit or I wanted that, because when people have been coming through, the big reactions have been that I had that, oh look at that, you know, really connecting. And that's what we thought the popularity of this exhibit would be, people connecting with their childhood and their past. But we're also hoping that people learn about those decades through the toys as well.
Personal favorite amongst the toys?
Well, the toy that I wanted that I never had was the Easy Bake Oven. But my personal favorite as far as playing with was the Light Bright. And actually, I was born after these these date ranges, but that shows that some of these toys really endure as far as popularity goes, because I loved the Light Bright.
Ann Mataraz, Vice President, Museum Exhibits and Collections.
Would you tell us about the Western Pennsylvania connection to this toy exhibit?
There's a number of great connections in here. Number one, this is a place of development and production of toys. We talk about the Wolverine Supply and Manufacturing Company, which is a Northside company on Western Avenue that really is a kind of metal parts maker in the early 20th century. They are making parts for a company called Sandy Andy that goes out of business. In bankruptcy, they buy Sandy Andy's patents and they start making sand toys, toys that you can pour sand in and the bucket dumps or the marble moves through. And they transition into completely, by the 20s, working as a toy manufacturer. And they're here in the city making toys until the 70s when the company moves out to Arkansas. Also the Slinky, which is invented in Philadelphia during the war, World War II, but Betty James, the wife of the man who invented the Slinky, her husband joins a religious movement, goes off to be a missionary in Bolivia, leaves her behind. She moves back home to Hollidaysburg and brings the company with her and ran that company. The family continues to run it in Hollidaysburg from the 50s on. We also talk about Mark's Toys. Mark's is two brothers in New York who start a toy company, but they put their manufacturing facilities in Erie and outside Moundsville, West Virginia. And so there's those toys made here in the region, things like Big Wheel that all of us remember, that are made here in the Western Pennsylvania larger region, the tri-state region, for decades.
Well, it's nostalgic and there are a lot of fun and games, there was a serious side and some danger to these toys.
Right, and that's one of the things they address. We address here in the exhibition is that there's increasing concern about and regulation of toys. You know, something like Mr. Potato Head that comes out in the 50s, in the beginning he's just the spare parts. You know, we know him as the potato and his eyes and ears and nose and mouth now. He's just the spare parts and he's meant to be, those are meant to be put in any vegetable, a carrot, a pepper, a potato that you have around the house. Well, not only the rotting vegetables, but the sharpness of those parts concerns parents. So in 1964, they come out with the plastic body and bigger parts. In the 70s, you begin to get government regulation of toys. You know, we all take for granted that you don't want to give things like marbles or tiny Super Bowls or Legos, regular Legos, to your children under three because they can choke on them. But that really comes out of government protection in the consumer, the beginning of the Consumer Protection Agency in 1973.
Now, the exhibit is set up to take us through the 50s, through the 80s. Would you tell us how it's designed and give our listeners a sense of what they're going to see when they come here?
One of the great things about the exhibit is the playful design of it. Each of the decades has a living room that you enter. Those living rooms are actually based on a play kind of toy houses. The first one is a Western-style 50s house. The second one is the 60 Barbies dream house that so many of us who grew up in that generation, young girls, coveted and begged for. And the third one is a 70s version of a Barbie playhouse again. So you actually can go into the living room, you can sit down, you can watch toy commercials on the TV. You're kind of surrounded by the great toys from each decade. And then there are spaces throughout the exhibit where you and your kids, grandkids, can actually play with those toys.
And what do these toys by decade, what do they say about society at that time?
Toys are a piece of material culture that really teach us about how we as a people change during time. So in the 50s, they're very gender specific. And that doesn't change completely by the 70s when the women's movement has started. But you begin to see, you know, Barbie's not just a doll with great fashion, but she's a doll with great fashion who's dressing for a career by the 70s with her own car that she can get to work and back. You begin to see the role of the civil rights movement and more diversity in toys. So young girls being marketed a doll like Julia, the television station that actually featured an African-American woman as its lead character. So you see toys created that speak to increasing diversity and increasing drive for equality in American life. You see toys that talk about the role of television, both as a means to sell to us and sell to kids, but also as a means to educate us. So as early education becomes increasingly more important in American society, you see educational toys and also educational toys that are tied to television shows like Sesame Street.
There are a lot of nostalgic toys here. What's the most valuable toy on display?
The most valuable pieces are actually the Star Wars pieces. They're so collectible. So to have Star Wars and Beatles memorabilia with original boxes, those are the most valuable of the toys.
Thank you.
You bet. Thanks.